It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, we are your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful but wet and breezy downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is currently 53 degrees. Out at the airport, they are showing northeast winds to 22 miles per hour, 89% humidity, and they are down to 1.5 miles of visibility. Don't forget, today is Election Day for Kodiak City and Borough races. You can vote in your polling location until 8 p.m. tonight. There are races for Kodiak City Council and Borough Assembly on this year's ballot. Find out more information at our website at kmxt.org. Click on Elections 2022. Coming up on the Midday Report, last night was the kickoff for Kodiak Fisheries debates. We heard from governor candidates Les Guerra and Bill Walker. Tonight, the senatorial candidates and the candidates for the U.S. House are in town, hopefully. But first, national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Nearly a week since Hurricane Ian tore through southwestern and central Florida, many hurricane survivors are navigating what may feel like a storm of red tape involving insurance coverage, cleanup assistance, and various permit services. But the state's reporting steady progress on one key front, getting electricity back. Familiar sound in Cape Coral and other parts of southwestern Florida. NPR's Quill Lawrence is in Naples.
Search and rescue efforts have mostly now turned to recovery and damage assessment. State and local utility companies say they hope to have 95% of customers fully back online by the end of the week. On the barrier islands off the coast of Fort Myers, it's a different story. Authorities would not say when power might return to those devastated beach communities. And restoring ruined bridges from the mainland will also take time. Rivers are slowly subsiding from historic flood levels, and lines at gas stations are getting shorter. But the work of rebuilding hundreds of thousands of homes has hardly begun. President Biden is expected to visit the area tomorrow. Quill Lawrence, NPR News, Naples, Florida.
More than 400,000 people are still without electricity. At least 100 lives in Florida were lost to Hurricane Ian. The U.S. Supreme Court is considering arguments held today in a major election case involving the Voting Rights Act and congressional districts in Alabama. NPR's Hanzi Lo Wang reports voting rights advocates are watching to see if the court's ruling will make it more difficult to protect the political power of voters of color around the country.
Alabama is asking the Supreme Court to overturn a lower court's order for the state to comply with the Voting Rights Act by creating a second congressional district where black voters make up the majority or close to it. During oral arguments, Alabama's lawyer claimed the 14th Amendment does not allow race to be considered when drawing voting districts. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson pushed back, citing the congressional record.
And when I drill down to that level of analysis, it became clear to me that the framers themselves adopted the Equal Protection Clause, the 14th Amendment, the 15th Amendment in a race-conscious way.
The court is expected to rule by early July. Hanzi Lo Wang, NPR News, Washington.
U.S. stocks end the day sharply higher, and Wall Street was rocked by a surprise report about billionaire Elon Musk. Here's NPR's David Gura.
Markets are still volatile, but October has started out strong. Shares of Twitter jumped by 13% after Bloomberg News reported billionaire Elon Musk had offered to close the deal under the original terms for $54.20 a share. Twitter's case against Musk for trying to back out is scheduled to go to trial in less than 2 weeks. Trading of Twitter shares was suspended for several hours after prices spiked on news of Musk's about-face. David Gura, NPR News, New York.
The Nasdaq and S&P close up more than 3%. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak's fisheries debates kicked off last night with two challengers in the governor's race, Les Guerra and Bill Walker. Current Governor Mike Dunleavy did not attend Monday's debate. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports both candidates spent time deriding Dunleavy's policies and outlining their visions for fisheries management.
The need for more science to manage Alaska's fisheries came up early and often during Monday's debate. So did climate change. And both candidates say the current governor's budget has hamstrung the state's ability to do its own research on changing ocean conditions. Former governor and independent candidate Bill Walker.
One flight here, I sat next to a young lady that was a fishery research biologist for Fish and Game was laid out because of budget cuts. We need the best available information in making the decisions. We need the best available research.
Democrat Les Guerra immediately ripped into Governor Dunleavy's budget cuts. He says the commercial fishing industry is just one area where Alaskans are suffering from the consequences.
We can't retain teachers. We can't retain police. I want a strong Department of Fish and Game that does studies. You know what a Department of Fish and Game commissioner does now? He testifies and talks about all the studies he's asked the feds to pay for.
Bycatch, which is the incidental catch of non-target species like salmon, also came up early and often. The governor created the Bycatch Review Task Force last year, but Guerra called it powerless.
And he put it together so that its recommendations would come out after the legislative session was over, so they couldn't do anything with it.
Guerra says picking the right people for Alaska's seats on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council is a better way to address the issue of bycatch. Walker also says the timing of the task force was convenient for the incumbent governor as he runs for re-election, but he'd keep it around if he were elected. He says the work the group is doing is important.
I like the idea of it being a year-round, not just, you know, it's going to expire in November. This issue is not going to expire in November.
Governor Dunleavy didn't attend Monday's fisheries debate, which is held in Kodiak every election year. He wasn't at the last one in 2018 either. The conversation between Walker and Guerra was amicable and at times lighthearted. Both candidates say they're tentatively in favor of hatcheries as long as they don't harm wild fish. They talked about the significance of the federal bipartisan infrastructure law and its potential to reinvigorate working waterfronts in coastal communities. Mariculture also came up. Walker says the industry could be a boon for Alaska, but it needs more support and investment. And he claims seaweed makes pretty good beer, too. Guerra says he'd favor small business loans for fishermen to get started in kelp farming.
I would like to do everything we can to expand this industry. It's a shoulder season industry, so if you're fishing in the summer, you can still do mariculture when you're not out fishing.
Both candidates were asked about their long-term visions for Alaska's seafood industry. Walker identified barriers to entry for new fishermen as one of the biggest challenges he sees for the industry.
Every fishing boat in my world is a small business, and many times it's a family business. And so I want to make sure that that is continued on and on for generations.
When asked who they would choose for Alaska's Fish and Game Commissioner, both Walker and Guerra said they want someone who is passionate and has management skills. Guerra says he's looking for someone who can talk fish.
It would be somebody who is not there or selected because of their politics, number one. I want them to be somebody who will make decisions based on science.
Monday's debate was the first of three fisheries debates in Kodiak, held over two nights. Congressional debates start tonight at 6:30. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
Members of the public can attend tonight's debates for U.S. House and Senate in person at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. They begin at 6:30. You can also listen to them right here on KMXT on 100.1 FM, and we are also streaming them from our website. That's at kmxt.org. The St. Paul Preschool at the Lutheran Church here in Kodiak is closing, adding to the shortage of childcare options on the island. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports administrators say they can't find a new director to keep the school open.
Parents were given letters late last week that said the last day of school for preschoolers at St. Paul Preschool is October 31st. Savannah Sella is the preschool's interim director. She says the decision to close is devastating.
It's hard to be the one to hand that letter out. Sorry, I'm going to get, to be the one to hand that letter out and just see the stress and the pain. And I want nothing more than to help these families. But unfortunately, it kind of just hit a dead end.
The preschool has been trying to hire a new director since August, when the former director took another job with the school district. Sella says parents were notified a few weeks ago that the preschool could close if that position wasn't filled. As of last week, no one had even applied for the job. 19 children go to St. Paul Preschool. Sella says St. Paul's program is one of the few child care options in Kodiak for kids as young as 2 years old. The school already had to make programming cuts over the summer because of staffing shortages. Sella says finding new child care options in Kodiak right now is difficult.
I know some people have already started getting on wait lists. There's really nothing open.
Sella says 8 part-time staff will also be losing their jobs with the preschool's closure. Some of them have started looking into opening a licensed in-home daycare, according to Sella, but there currently aren't any plans to open one anytime soon. In the meantime, Sella says St. Paul Preschool will continue its search for a new director, and they hope to reopen at a future date. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
The University of Alaska has responded to an unfair labor practices complaint filed by the union which represents its faculty, and filed its own complaint. The University Administration and United Academics, or UNAC, have been trying to work out a new 3-year faculty contract for over a year. UA Associate Vice President of Public Affairs Robbie Graham says filing the complaint was necessary to draw an overall picture of the negotiation process.
Not only for the Labor Relations Agency, but for the public, because it is confusing and it is complicated. We thought that responding to the union's ULP was limiting, because we could only respond to the scope and the content of their filing. And the university's filing provides a greater context for the entire negotiation process.
The two sides are in federally mediated negotiations and have accused one another of dragging out the bargaining process. The university's complaint characterizes the union as obstructionist. Graham points to what the filing describes as, quote, surface bargaining, close quote.
Not coming to the table in a serious manner. So, for example, UNAC canceled meetings, ended bargaining sessions early, cut the cadence of the meetings in half, withheld introduction of articles, meaning the issues to be negotiated, and delayed the start of the mediation process in general.
In May, the university declared the talks at an impasse and imposed a new contract, unilateral actions the union contests. Hundreds of refugees from the war in Ukraine have come to Alaska to settle, mainly near family in places with Slavic communities. Much of the influx of Ukrainians follows a wave of immigrants from the former Soviet bloc countries who moved to Alaska in the 1990s. But as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, this year's wave of Ukrainians appears to have crested.
Soon after Russia invaded Ukraine back in February, President Biden enacted the Uniting for Ukraine program to help those fleeing the conflict find a temporary home more quickly than through conventional refugee efforts. Since then, more than 54,000 have come to America under the program, including more than 300 who came to Alaska.
So we saw this immediate rush of people, right, who applied right at the beginning of the program, were approved, and then got their families here as quickly as possible.
Issa Spatrizano oversees refugee settlement and food resources for Anchorage-based Catholic Community Services, and she serves as Alaska's state refugee coordinator. And she says she and her staff have been busy over the past few months.
Statewide, we're seeing some serious growth in the refugee resettlement program. It's the largest year in the state's history, by far.
Spatrizano says most of those who've arrived in Alaska under the Uniting for Ukraine program have family who've applied to sponsor them to live in places where previous waves of Slavic-speaking immigrants have settled.
The largest Ukrainian community statewide per census data are Anchorage, the Mat-Su Valley, and Delta Junction.
The earlier immigrants began coming to Alaska in the 1990s from nations that previously were part of the old Soviet bloc.
Many former Soviet Union arrivals independently decided to move to Alaska and decided to make their home across the state, but especially in the area of Delta Junction.
Spatrazano told members of the Delta City Council last month that the refugee program she heads up got started in response to the formation and growth of Delta's Slavic community.
And ultimately ended with Refugee Assistance and Immigration Services, the program we now know being established to serve refugee populations that call Alaska home.
Spatrazano emphasized in her response to a question from Delta Council member Pete Hallgren that the program that allowed the new arrivals from Ukraine is not a ticket to citizenship.
Somebody who comes over is temporary or on parole, they can apply for permanent status.
That hasn't been totally figured out by Congress yet. At this point, no. You are welcome to stay for 2 years.
Spatrazano said in an interview last week that the influx of new arrivals had begun to slow.
Alaska definitely should expect more cases, but I don't think we're going to expect as many people as quickly as we saw them in the first opening of the program.
Spatrazano says she'll continue updating Alaskans about the Uniting for Ukraine program, especially those who live in communities where many of those fleeing the war have come to live. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
A state plan to help build out a network of electrical vehicle charging stations around the state has been approved by the Federal Highway Administration. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the OK puts the state in line for over $50 million in funding over the next 5 years.
The Alaska Energy Authority and the State Department of Transportation are working together on the EV plan, by which up to $52 million federal dollars will be distributed in support of fast charging stations to facilitate more electric vehicle use in Alaska.
Range anxiety is one of our biggest issues or challenges for the adoption of EV, and so we want to try to eliminate that.
Alaska Energy Authority Executive Director Curtis Thayer emphasizes it's uncertain how many fast charger projects the money will pay for.
We don't know what the cost of the equipment is as of yet, and then also where we're placing it and what type of electrical work or what type of work that needs to be done prior to installing the electric charger.
Thayer says the federal money can also be used to upgrade existing EV charging stations and help cover operation and maintenance costs. He says the plan's initial focus will be supporting EV charging stations between Anchorage and Fairbanks. The federal program stipulates stations capable of charging four EVs simultaneously, located every 50 miles. Thayer says the state has received an exemption from the spacing requirement for a stretch of the Parks Highway where there aren't any viable year-round host sites.
The gap there is about 80 miles from mile 135, which is just north of Trapper Creek, and it extends to Cantwell, which is mile 210.
Thayer says the AEA anticipates putting out a request for proposals for EV charging stations, and selected hosts will have a significant portion of their costs covered.
The program would fund 80% of the funding, and they would have to come up with 20% of the funding.
Looking beyond phase one of the EV plan, Thayer says additional highways and locations will be targeted for charging stations.
Homer to Anchorage, and we have the Glen Allen Delta to Tokepiece. And then you have the Marine Highway System, Ketchikan, Sitka, Kodiak, Juneau.
Thayer says rural Alaska is also part of the long-range plan.
I'm talking the hub communities, Nome, Kotzebue, Bethel, Dillingham.
The state's EV charging station plan will be updated annually over the next 5 years, and Thayer underscores that it's a living document, and the public is encouraged to provide input and feedback. The AEA is holding meetings on the EV plan around the state. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The highly anticipated annual celebration of Katmai National Park's most rotund bears kicks off this week. Fat Bear Week returns tomorrow with a tournament to decide the Katmai brown bear that best exemplifies fatness. The competition began in 2014 and has grown to be a national phenomenon. Last year, an older bear named Otis took the crown for the fourth time. Around 800,000 people voted in Fat Bear Week in 2021. The competition is arranged as a single elimination tournament where the public can vote one-on-one fat bear matchups each day until one is crowned champion. The brown bears up for this year's title were revealed in a live stream yesterday. You can visit fatbearweek.org to vote.
Insight Daily Radio. From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the art of all things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
Here's something new or very old, depending upon your point of view. Some scientific circles believe that the jellyfish protein, known as apoicurin, has an amino acid sequence that is very similar to that of the human body's calcium-binding proteins. So when these cells in the lab are treated with this protein, they believe they are more resistant to induced damage. This has spawned the idea that apoicurin can protect nerve cells from some of the consequences of aging. However, like ginkgo biloba, this new discovery is receiving similar speculation, and the FDA are calling this a fraud. The case filed by the FDA dates back to 2012 when a warning letter was issued disputing the benefits of the supplement. The FDA and New York State Attorney General have charged unsubstantiated claims that any product of this nature product improves memory, provides cognitive benefits, and is clinically shown to work. Their view is you don't acquire the properties of the food you eat. Eating poultry won't make you fly, and eating fish won't make you a faster swimmer. Eating jellyfish proteins won't improve your memory, nor will it allow you to emit green fluorescent light. And do bear in mind the irony here. While some would like us to believe that jellyfish can make us smarter, this anemone, in and of itself, is not known for its smarts. In fact, they don't even possess a brain, and no central nervous system to boot. Can humans benefit from such creatures? Or is the fact they survive 650 million years without a brain something that might give hope to some people? Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries. Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Tuesday. It is the fourth day of October, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 8:20. It will set again at 7:34. That will give us 11 hours and 14 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 27 degrees, set in 1974, and our record high was 61 degrees, set in 1967. Currently 53 degrees with a light rain fog mist and breezy conditions. Out at the airport, they are showing northeast winds to 22 and 1.5 miles of visibility. We'll be on the lookout for some rain. It's expected to rain today, tonight, and tomorrow. Rain could be heavy at times today, tonight, and tomorrow. For today, east winds to 25 are expected to gust as high as 40. For tonight, east winds to 25, gusting as high as 35. And for tomorrow, northeast winds to 20 should come down to 15 in the afternoon tomorrow. Look for highs in the mid-50s and low overnight of about 50. The good news is, for Thursday, they're talking about partly sunny skies. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up this afternoon at 3:41 here on the east side. That will be a 4-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 9:54 this evening of 8.1 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 4:47 this afternoon and be 6 feet in Larsen Bay. That will be followed by a high tide at 10:27 this evening of 11.3 feet. Well, let's check in the Alaska Department of Fish and Game with another announcement.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 39, date issued 3:30 p.m. on October 1st. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Sunday, October 2nd, until 6 p.m. Tuesday, October 4th in the following areas. In the East Side Kodiak District, except for the Inner Yugak and Outer Yugak Bay sections remain closed. The Outer Aikuluk, Halva Bay, Sturgeon, and Outer Karluk sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, and the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. As previously announced, fishermen are reminded that until further notice, in that portion of the Northwest and Southwest Kodiak District, south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may cannot be retained by person gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing, and this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Mariners, here's your weather forecast for Marmot Island, Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through Wednesday. East winds to 30 knots today, seas to 11 feet. For tonight, northeast 30, seas to 13 feet. And for tomorrow, northeast 30, becoming southeast 15 in the afternoon, seas to 13 feet. Over on our west side, gale warning through Wednesday in the Shelikof Strait. Northeast increasing to 40 knots this afternoon, seas building to 18 feet today. For tonight, northeast 40, seas to 15 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, northeast 40, diminishing to 30 in the afternoon, seas to 13 feet, diminishing all the way down to 4 feet with southeast winds to 20 on Wednesday night. Looking over some meetings coming up for the Kodiak Island Borough. Tonight at 5:30 p.m., the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall. That's at 5:30 p.m. Tomorrow, the Fire Protection Area Number 1 Board will be meeting in the Bayside Fire Hall. That's happening at 6 p.m. And on Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having their regular meeting in the Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. Lots happening at the library. The Bridge Club meets every Monday at 1 p.m. at the library. All interested players are welcomed. And the library's monthly writers group will meet Wednesday, October 5th, that's tomorrow, at 5:30 p.m. for those wanting to pursue, improve, and share their writing. For patrons 14 and older, please. Space is limited, so please call 486-8686 to save your spot. Wednesdays at 3:30, the library offers a Lego club. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. And Thursdays at 10 a.m., the library hosts their Lap Sit Story Time for babies 0 to 3 and their adults. Join volunteer Abby Hanna to share a story and a song with some quality time to play and socialize. And Thursday, October 6th, is the library's next Chess Club meeting. That's at 3 p.m. on Thursday. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your skills in a friendly, cozy environment. No experience is necessary, and it's open to all ages. The library is open from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday. The Kodiak Amateur Radio Emergency Services Group will be offering amateur radio licensing exams. That's happening next Wednesday, tomorrow, 7 p.m. The exams will be held at the Bayside Volunteer Fire Department's training room. You need to pre-register, so call John Kimmel to do so at 907-942-0741. This coming Saturday at the Aleutic Museum, they are going to have a lecture about marine mammal response and the program that's led by Shunack Tribe Natural Resource Director Matt Van Dale. That's happening from 3 to 4:30 p.m. at the Aleutic Museum. It's free and open to all, supported by the EVOS Trustee Council. The Kodiak Fish and Game Advisory Committee will be holding a public meeting at the ADF&G Chiniac Conference Room. That's over on Near Island at 351 Research Court. That's happening next Monday, October 10th at 5:30 p.m. If you'd like to join the meeting by phone, you need to call 1-253-215-8782 or 888-475-4499. Coming out stories. It's happening at the Benny Benson Building, room 12-128. That's happening next Tuesday, October 11th from 6:30 to 8:30. October 11th is National Coming Out Day and supports the queer community in publicly sharing their sexual orientation and or gender identities for others to see to combat homophobia and discrimination and be visible to those who are still closeted. All are welcome. They're partnering with KWRCC because October is also Domestic Violence Month. The event is free, but we welcome donations to the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center. Their greatest need at this time of year is canned goods, specifically salmon and chicken. But again, that's next Tuesday, 6:30 to 8:30 in the Benny Benson Building, room 128.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.